This Do Lectures episode features co-founders of mental health coaching Sanctus, James Routledge and George Bittani, recorded live at a global event in Cardigan, West Wales in 2019.
I first met George about 9 years ago now at university in Sheffield. I was 19, had no idea what I wanted to do with my life, barely knew how to sort of tie my own shoelaces. Grew up in Stoke, amazing, large family, incredible group of friends. My career to date at 19 had been a mixture of part-time jobs waiting on, but then had a real stint as a team leader at KFC. I'd been traveling for a couple of months. I'd been to Vietnam, so I'd kind of ticked that off. And I was about to go and do history and politics at university, which I chose mainly because I was all right at history, and it was actually, the grades were a bit lower to get in for history and politics, believe it or not. And that was it, really. And university, for me, was the kind of land of opportunity. I was going to work out what I wanted to do with my life. My dad said to me before I went, he was like, if you do one thing, just find what you're passionate about, yeah, and become an expert in that. So I was like, that's great advice, Dad. I'm going to try and do that. And yeah, so I just went with a really open mind. And I met George in Freshers Week, walking down into uni. And we got chatting, and I'll be honest, mate, I was pretty inspired by you in general.
Thank you, mate.
I was, no, thank you.
So yeah, so for me growing up before that, I'd played football my whole childhood. I really liked it. I wouldn't say I loved it, but I was really good at it. I just happened to be good at it. And so I played football my whole childhood. And then at 17, 18, I got told I wasn't good enough. So I stopped. And at that point, I think for the first time, I had nothing. So I kind of had the space to actually explore what I actually did love and my passion. And that's where business, entrepreneurship, creating things, just sort of, it poured out of me. My mum says apparently when I was like 9 or 10, I used to get my little brother and sister to bring papers in a briefcase to my bedroom in my like makeshift office, and I'd tell them off for being late. before I went to uni, I learned how to fix watches. I started a watch repair business, and going into uni, I had this dream to be the student watch repair brand of the country, franchise it up and down the country. What a crap idea. Absolutely. Everybody thought it was a crap idea, other than you, mate. I think James is you're the only person that took me, you know, believed in me and didn't think I was crazy.
I remember the business plan well.
Yeah, and no, you took me seriously. And that's where our friendship started.
Yeah, and from there, really, I think having seen George have this kind of entrepreneurial spirit, which I was really inspired by, like I've said, and yeah, it was impressive. You were a bit of a go-getter, a bit of a maverick. And had not really met anyone like you before, to be honest. So that's where my entrepreneurial spirit sort of seemed to rise up from. I'd never been entrepreneurial really before. I had a stint of selling marshmallows at school, which didn't go very well. And suddenly, myself and George started this technology business together. And suddenly, we'd raise money. So we dropped out of university after 2 years, and moved away from university, living up in the northeast in Newcastle, and suddenly I had a team, a board, money in the bank. I didn't have a fucking clue what I was doing, and I was scared, to be honest. You know, I was scared. It was very exciting, but I was completely out of my depth, and to be honest, deep down, I knew a lot of things weren't right. Really, I'd really got excited about starting the business because it made me feel really special. It made me feel really cool. And it gave me something to anchor my identity around. I'm James, the founder of. I'm the guy who's dropped out of university. It allowed me to be a bit different. And that's really what I'd always wanted. I'll be honest, I'd always wanted to be a bit different than everyone else, be special. And this business really allowed me to do that. So I kind of channeled my self-worth and everything I was about into this business. And I really started to just look outside of myself and think, how do I be successful? Oh, I'll just be like them. So I really developed this facade, this front of showing no emotion, showing no weakness, being the CEO. And the idea really during that time of running that business of opening up or being vulnerable or talking about my feelings was absolutely not on the table for me. It just wasn't available to me, and it just wasn't an option. And the notion of mental health in general was, yeah, it just wasn't there. The notion of being vulnerable at all just wasn't there. The notion of allowing myself to slow down, to stop, to be honest, to show that I was scared, it wasn't an option at all. So I didn't do it.
Yeah, to be honest, mate, I'll come back at you. At that time, I didn't feel like I could talk to you. I didn't feel like you'd listen. I feel like you were so scared of failing, so scared of admitting you were wrong, and so scared of what others might think that you just shut me out. And yeah, it's actually quite emotional saying it. I feel like we lost our friendship. We weren't, when you think about that time, mate, we weren't really, I wouldn't say we were mates. No. We lost that. And yeah, difficult time.
Yeah, and to be honest, I felt with you the same though, in a way. You weren't quite available. You know, I think there was a lot of things that you wanted to say that you never said. So you were sometimes really there, and then other times you weren't. So you were quite unreliable.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's hard to hear. To be honest, again, I wish I'd have known that. Then you're telling me it's not the first time, but you're telling me in front of everyone now. I wish I'd have been able to say this to you, because I was struggling too. I didn't know. Yeah, I think I'd been trying to be Gordon Gekko and bloody Jordan Belfort, and my confidence was coming from somewhere else, and I couldn't keep it up. I honestly couldn't, I wasn't strong enough, and I lost my confidence, my self-belief, and I was a shell. I honestly was. I wasn't strong enough to speak up. There was like business meetings and big decisions where I didn't feel like what I had to say was worth saying, so I didn't say it. I didn't know how to say it. Yeah, I just felt heavy, mate. I felt like I couldn't get out of bed in the morning. Felt like I didn't want to get out of bed at all. So the only thing I didn't know what else to do. The only thing I could do is just leave. I left the company. I left you, and I just ran away. I actually worked on a farm like this for months and just fed chickens and just pretended it didn't happen. I didn't tell anybody what I did. And yeah, I kind of wish I could have said that to you then. And
I don't think I would have listened, to be honest. I thought you were running away. I thought you were, probably the more honest thing is that I probably knew you were right, and I couldn't admit that to myself. So my way of dealing with this uncertainty, this fear, this kind of deep knowledge really that what I was working on was wrong was to just carry on. Was to just persevere, because I'd always been taught that if you just carry on, it'll be all right. You know, keep calm and carry on, all these business stories of, you know, work, and it'll work out. So my strategy was to just continue and just ignore, which didn't work so well, surprisingly. And I was just burning myself out. And I think, I often used to think when I was working, I was tired, I thought, it's other things, I've not eaten well enough, I've not changed. It's because I had no fuel. I was running on fumes for so long because there was no fire within me at all. So I just kept going and I kept going and kept going until I could not go any longer. I completely burnt out, made the decision to shut down the business, and this time it was my turn to run away. And I continued to run away from my feelings. I continued to run away from those things that were keeping me awake at night. I just ran and I ran and I ran. I went to Bali and was a fucking shell, shadow of myself. And I came back and I got another job and it was another mask to put on. I'm smashing it again, I'm doing so well, and my Instagram's looking fucking brilliant. And I was deeply, deeply unhappy. I was heartbroken. My entire identity and sense of who I was had just been shattered, absolutely ripped apart. And I felt like a nothing, like a nobody, I had nothing. But I was scared, and I was judging myself for even feeling that way. So even though I felt that way, I still wouldn't even let myself feel that way. And that went on for about a year. And for the first time, the feelings that I'd ignored and I'd just shoved as far down as possible started to bubble up. And I started to feel things in my body that I just never felt before. I started to feel my heart flutter. I started to feel sweat in my palms, like now. I started to feel knots in my stomach. I started to notice that I was being horrible to myself. Horrible. I was being so hard on myself. I was beating myself up so hard, I was black and blue. I was berating myself, I was judging myself, calling myself a failure, saying it was my fault that everything went wrong, you didn't fucking listen, which was kind of true. And I was being horrible to myself. And the anxiety became debilitating. I felt like I was having random panic thoughts, thought I was going to get hit by buses when I crossed the road, started to have panic attacks, and they were vicious. Really vicious. Where I thought they were that bad, I thought I was dying. And it was horrible. And that was the first time I felt my feelings and I felt mental health, really.
And I must admit, when you were having panic attacks, I was honestly like this, like, get over there. I was like, I'm not catching a panic attack. I don't want one. I'm not having that. And I honestly, arm's length, didn't want to catch one, and I was scared. I avoided it, and I didn't really know how to handle it, and I wasn't really there for you, to be honest, because I didn't know what to do. And yeah, I was afraid. But I think what I started to see from that point on was you change. I feel like as soon as you actually started to feel that and accept it and have to go through that, which was difficult when I wasn't there for you, you started to change and started to open up and you started to listen to me. Mm. When we did speak, you did listen. Mm. And you started to open up and be more honest, and you started writing these blog posts, and I was like, where's this coming from? Like, this is the true best mate I knew was in there, but it's coming out. And you wrote these blog posts that were so real and raw, and you were just expressing what you were feeling and how you were feeling, what you were thinking. I'd never seen honesty and vulnerability like that, mate. And it was powerful. I never thought it could be that fucking cool. And yeah, between me and you, you inspired me.
And you did play a part in that, because when I was leaving the business, it was my birthday and George bought me a journal. And when I was really struggling, I found that journal and I picked it up and started writing in it, which is a nice bit of poetry in our story. And the first line in that journal I wrote was, I feel weird. And eventually the journal entries got a little bit more heartfelt, a little bit more real. Started to say, I had a panic attack today. Until eventually I started saying stuff like, I'm anxious and I'm stressed and that's okay. And I started to allow myself and let myself feel the way I was feeling. And I started to open up, started to tell people how I was feeling, which I'd never done before. And fair enough, you know, when I did tell you I had a panic attack, you did sound very concerned. You did a very nervous laugh and I thought, well, that's not helpful. So I tried and I spoke to more people. And I started to open up and I started to explore parts of myself and let out parts of myself that for years, for my whole life, to be honest, I didn't think were allowed. You know, the part of myself that's sensitive or feels things or has emotions, or the part of myself that is creative or romantic, I didn't think that they were allowed. So I hid them. And I exaggerated what was allowed, which for me was a lad. And the rest of myself lay dormant. And during this period, I started to let these parts of myself out. In our previous business, I used to say, I'm not creative. I'm not a creative person. And then suddenly I found myself staying in the office, creating a brand and drawing things and expressing myself and writing poetry and letting myself fall in love, all these things that I'd never ever allowed myself to do, and I did change, and it was phenomenal, and I started to talk about mental health and write about it. That was the passion that I found. There's also this thing in me, purpose, that I never knew I could find, and it's funny because George, you said I knew you didn't think you got it, but I knew you got it. Mm. I knew you'd fucking love mental health. I just knew you didn't know it. You just didn't know it.
No, I didn't.
And you didn't think you had it.
I didn't.
You didn't think you had mental health.
And I didn't.
And I knew you did.
No, I
didn't. And I also knew...
No, you're right.
I also knew that what I believe mental health is about, that you also did. Because what I was seeing was that good mental health was me being who I am, being myself. That's what I truly believe. That's what our entire brand is essentially built on now. And I knew George loved that. I knew he loved it.
No, I knew
you loved it.
I have, yeah, no, I've always loved that. And it's always, I wouldn't have called it mental health. It was deep within me. And I think when you start to talk about it, I did get that, but it's hard. It's hard for me to name that. It's hard for me to face it and step into it and go inward and be like, okay, I have it. I have mental health and actually this is going on for me. That was really hard. It still is. Like you inspired me to do the work in the last couple of years. I have been doing the work, but I still am. I mean, I've got therapy next week. I was at yoga this morning. I did a bloody death meditation a couple of days ago, holding hands.
We all did.
We all did. I don't know what's going on, mate. I'm on some sort of spiritual journey. I'm becoming a spiritual businessman. It's a word I'd have never, never, ever used. I'm a footballer. I fix watches. Yeah. It's hard, mate. It is
and
hard.
It's been the same for me. I go to therapy once a week. I write poetry now. I mean, when did that start? I do so many things that I never thought I would before. And that's been hard as well. That change has been really difficult. Therapy, I've got into walking. I bloody love it. Going hiking, I feel like a 50-year-old man. But I love it. And no judgment. I've just ruined the talk. I've ruined it. And I've changed. And as I've gone on this journey, or whatever you would like to call it, I've noticed that as I've explored my relationship with myself and looked at who I am, as I've worked on my mental health and I've worked on myself, my relationship with everything has changed. Some things have changed dramatically, some things haven't changed at all, but I've changed what I think about myself, my body, what I wear, the way I look, my relationships with my friends, with my family, what I do with my life, my purpose, what I work on 40, 50 hours a week, what I eat, where I spend my money, my relationship with the earth, with the planet, with the environment. I'm trying not to use plastic anymore for a week. It's not something that I would have ever done before. And I genuinely believe that's because I've started to work on myself. And that's a belief that we truly hold now at Sanctus and us two together, is that if we can work on ourselves, we can work on our mental health. If we start there, then that actually is how we'll change our world together. Thanks.
The Do Lectures is here to share stories of remarkable people in the hope they will inspire you to go and do amazing things too. There are over 300 talks to listen to, or if you prefer, watch on our website, thedolectures.com. Hit the subscribe button on your favourite podcast platform to get the latest episodes when they come out.